and all tune in and log on to Positive Vibe every Thursday from 3 to 5. Let's see.
There is this thing. Do you realize what is? There is this thing. Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing on. There is this thing going on. Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news? I'm brought to you live.
And you are listening to this month's edition of Labor Radio here on CKUT 90.3 FM. And it is June 18th. And this is your co-host, Mustafa Henaway, always with
Stefan Doucette. Thanks for being with us for another edition of Labor Radio. Today, the bulk of the episode will be spent with our comrade Panos Papazoglou in Greece, talking about the recent upheaval surrounding a new labor law that was just passed through the Greek parliament a couple days ago. But we'll also take the opportunity to jibber-jabber around labor issues happening in Canada, largely in Quebec, but also a bit outside of Quebec and outside of Canada as well. So thanks for joining us this month.
And to start us off, I mean, in Quebec, we've really had there's been quite a bit of an upheaval in terms of labor struggles, both in the public sector, but also in the private sector. Most recently we've had the strike by paramedics in Montreal and Laval. You've had collective agreement negotiations also with support staff in the education sector. And I mean, the first thing that's the most interesting, I mean, we'll talk about the public sector a bit, has been the actual some of the labor struggles happening in food processing, where we've seen a lot of both, we've seen the upheaval now in Exceldoor, a large chicken processing plant, where now it's come to the point where actually the government is trying to force arbitration on the local, which is represented by TWAC, or the United Food and Commercial Workers. So this has been really an interesting struggle, but also Ollie Mill, where we've seen, also again a collective agreement negotiation, but we've also seen a high number of migrant workers who are actually who are employed at the Ollie Mill plant in Beauce as well.
Yeah, so just to talk a little bit about these two, we'll start with the Exceldoor because it's been in the news a lot lately. If you've been paying attention to just mainstream news, the story's been sort of spun out from the what's actually happening, which is a conflict between the workers and management, a sort of classic labor struggle in that sense. And it's been sort of taken to this moral question around the euthanasia of chickens who are being produced and who don't, they don't have the processing facilities because of the strike. So we're talking about 550 workers working in this chicken plant. And so that they, I think, process around 40%, if I'm not mistaken, of the chicken that's raised in Quebec. And so the fact that they've been on strike for just under a month now has totally kind of frozen the sector in a sense. And a lot of producers are complaining around having to put down their chickens. This has reached all the way to the Prime Minister talking about how this is just wasteful. You have very popular news personalities talking about how, oh, you know, like certain people can't even feed themselves, and there's not like they don't have enough to put food on the table, and yet we're throwing out all these chickens. Nowhere in these conversations are we talking about how this actually affects people's ability to put food on the plate. I think the only people whose ability to feed their families has really been affected has been the workers themselves who are on strike and who are trying to negotiate better working conditions and salaries. I don't think that the price of chicken has been like drastically altered for people in Quebec, and certainly not for the people who are consuming the cheapest type of food, who are working at the lowest wages or on social assistance. Those people are generally not feeling the effects of the strike, I can guarantee you that. But that's the message that the bourgeoisie in Quebec and their government has been putting forward to try to put an end to the strike. So they've been trying to force the hand of the workers into arbitration, which, as we know, is like a non-democratic means of solving labor issues. It's happened with the Port of Montreal workers lately. Before that, obviously, we always mention the Canada Post strikes that were ended by the federal government and where they were put into arbitration. So this is the type of labor relations that is favored by the ruling class, is to force negotiations, force arbitration, and take away the ability of workers to use the weapons at their disposal, which is, you know, as you know, like the strike is the most effective and probably the most damaging to the ruling class's ability to control workers.
No, and even though it bills itself as sort of this cooperative, it's really a cooperative of owners, and it's not sort of a cooperative of actual workers. And actually is one of the largest retailers or chicken providers outside of the, I mean, one of the very few within the monopoly, within the poultry industry, you know, outside of, I mean, Ollie Mill and outside of, I mean, Ollie Mill and XL Door are the two major, you know, monopolies, in, you know, in terms of the Quebec context, right? So it's clear that they're able to pay the wage increases, and within slaughterhouses, it's clear that the conditions are horrific. The profits are there, right? We're talking about people demanding simply a living wage, that they're in these conditions providing the most basic and staple of goods, and this is a company that can clearly afford it. So it's interesting now to see these struggles in these slaughterhouses. I mean, XL Door is not, you know, the only one, but it's so it's clear that like this is a major part of I mean this goes right up to the food chain, right? Or the supply chain also, right? Where major grocers try to dictate the prices, and where the wages is constantly, the pressure keeps building down and down and down, but all along the profits keep going up and up and up.
And I just wanted to mention in closing about this particular conflict is the kind of, I just thought it was funny that XL Door this so-called cooperative tried to was putting out feelers about trying to get their industry declared as essential in a way which would like sort of facilitate back to work legislation and emergency laws and so on. So it's just funny how you know, obviously everyone thinks that what they do is important and essential and so on, but the fact that they were trying to use the language of essential services, which is, you know, the way that people talk about hospitals, you know, and ambulances, and it just, I don't know if it really took off the way that they wanted, but you could see that they had a little false start trying to bring that narrative into play. But this situation is unfolding as we speak right now. On Wednesday, the 16th, the government was able to get the producers, Exceldor, to accept arbitration, and so far TUAC has refused arbitration, saying that they want to stick with their methods that they've been using so far, namely the strike and so on. But to speak about other things that are happening in Quebec, I mean, like you mentioned earlier, Moose, there's the whole public sector negotiations, which are kind of hitting a different stride. What we're talking about in the public sector is largely the healthcare sector and the education sector are the sort of main players here. The nurses union just signed their agreement finally. They had signed a tentative agreement in December, but it was voted in by the membership just this week, I believe. So the nurses are taken care of, and also the FTQ signed an agreement in principle, which they're not the biggest public sector unit, but they are a significant one in the sense that they're part of this big three that's around the table. So them signing it is definitely very significant for what's going to happen in the coming weeks. Otherwise, the CSN, like the FSSS, the Santé Services Sociaux Federation of CSN, they're holding fast. They are not sort of following the CSQ and the FTQ, which are sort of starting to sign agreements. And notably, they blocked the Port of Montreal about a week ago. And they are, you know, still sending messages to the membership saying, we're still negotiating, this is not over for us. And I think it's significant because they also represent some of the lowest waged workers in the whole public sector. And so their demands kind of set the bar in a way for low wage workers across the province and the private sector as well.
And I mean, the other big part of the public sector negotiations and has been support worker staff, particularly in the education sector, where unions have been demanding an end to subcontracting, particularly and hiring out, especially in these jobs where a lot of support workers are actually working less than full time already. And so are already in precarious positions on call. And then on top of that, having their work subcontracted out. So unions have been demanding that that these remain public sector jobs and not subcontracted out. It's not so much about the fight for wages, but and then also the ability to control their schedules in terms of fighting against split shifts and sort of this kind of contractualization of their own work as well. And then, you know, and this is a pretty significant, you know, that keep the entire education sector running, right? It's people who are janitors, lunchroom people who are doing you know, after school programs, assisting teachers, service de garderie, like, so we're you know, roughly 30,000 workers. So it's a significant a struggle. While the strike was called off, it was it's still an ongoing sort of in terms of their negotiations. And also, again, so part of this attempt to continue to fight out you know, the ways in which the government is trying to privatize and continue to sort of weaken the role of the unions in the public sector through such means, right? That it's not this frontal attack, but constantly these attempts to contract out. And what, you know, what we see with proposés as well, you know, that's still the prevalent use of temp agencies, of proposés, even alongside these collective agreements. So it's kind of a struggle that is really about not just about their contracts, but it's really a struggle against privatization as well.
And maybe just a final thing, like or you can add more if you want, Moose, but I was hearing from a comrade who's a member of FTQ. He's a postal worker, but he attended the presentation of FTQ about their agreement in principle. And what was sort of being said around the table was that these were some of the best contracts that they've won in the past 30 years. So I think it'll be important to sort of see what kind of a long-term political game that the CAC is playing here. Because obviously in the midst of a crisis like this, and when they're facing down an election next year, they might just be playing it safe now in order to assure themselves a second mandate where they'll be able to usher in the full shock austerity that will be demanded by the capitalist class once COVID is more firmly behind us. Because right now, obviously, it looks bad if they just lock out all these people that got us through the crisis. People's memories can be long or they can be short, but the way that they'll play this in the long run is they have to do the things that their class demands of them. And so I think that this is sort of a prediction, I guess, but is to just be careful around like some of the gains that are being won. Like definitely the FAE, that represents most of the school teachers in Quebec City and Montreal, like they got very large wage increases. But what does that translate to in terms of the resiliency of the whole education system, and similarly for the healthcare system? We'll just have to watch this, obviously watch this negotiation as it kind of comes to an end in the next weeks and maybe months, but that this is not the end of the battle, of course.
No, I mean, on that note, it is interesting because it also relates to sort of the way that they're no longer... You know, we've talked about this multiple times on the show, which has been PL59, the new health and safety reforms. It's still a sitting duck. It's still going through the reading and the committee, and actually may not even be voted on this year, particularly the prevention aspect of it, right? Where there isn't a sort of consensus. And, you know, while some people will point, well, there was resistance, it wasn't as strong resistance, I think, as people were hoping. But the fact that there was resistance to it, it's clear that CAC doesn't want to stoke the flames. And that is maybe probably, yeah, accepting some kind of labor peace until the elections. And in particular, because there is all of this kind of the room for maneuver, and also because not wanting to affect, you know, also it's base who might be also electoral, like, you know, who might be membership in the unions, and yeah, so it's interesting the idea that they're sort of just that they're kind of biding time, and that they're not willing to confront labor as much as they want to. And it's not out of principle, but it's more of like a tactical question for them until the next election, and also when there will be the urgency to deal with sort of the kind of the indebtedness that and all of the debt that the government has taken on during the pandemic. So I think you're probably right on this. Oh, I mean, in international solidarity, also following up on what we were talking about last month on Labor Radio with Hassan Husseini from Labor for Palestine, and what's been probably the most, you know, exciting sort of international solidarity witnessed both in South Africa, Italy, and even on the West Coast, has been trade unions, activists from the Palestine Solidarity Movement coming together to really just set up the global picket line, right? So we've had really, there's been successful blockades similar to that of South Africa, not blockades, but actual pickets to not allow Israeli ships to dock. And there was a successful picket demonstration supported by the Longshore Workers Union, the Arab Resource Organizing Center, and multiple other organizations in the Bay Area that successfully blocked an Israeli ship from docking. There was calls in Vancouver. And then in South Africa, in one of the ports, workers refused to unload a ship as well. So all in solidarity with Palestine. So it's not around, you know, an immediate labor struggle, but really the power of kind of international solidarity. And I mean, this is kind of timed also with the call that was put out by all of the trade unions in Palestine. So from the pharmacist union to the farmers union to the new Palestinian Trade Union Federation to the PGFTU, which is the Palestinian General Federation of Trade Unions, have all put a call calling for similar pickets and blockades of Israeli ships, of weapons being sent to Israel to really, you know, to really enact BDS from the ground up, and that labor has a central role to play in that.
So I guess on that note, we'll now go to our interview for this episode with Panos Papazoglou about the labor situation in Greece. And so thanks so much for listening. This is Labor Radio on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. So you're still listening to Labor Radio on CKUT. We're joined right now live from Greece by a comrade, Panos Papazoglou. He's a member of the Council of the Greek Workers Association of Quebec here in Montreal. He's been living in Greece for the past year. He's active in the labor movement there in the city of Larissa through the Labor Council of that city. And we're going to speak with him about the labor upheaval that's been happening across Greece in the last few weeks. Specifically, there's been a couple general strikes. So to explain the context for that, we're lucky enough to have someone on the ground over there. So thanks so much for being with us today, Panos.
I thank you for inviting me. And it's my pleasure to be with you and discuss such an important thing, which is the anti-workers bill that is going to pass. It was passed today at the Greek Parliament.
Okay. Well, so, great. So yeah, tell us about this bill then. Like, so what's in it, and maybe we can start from there. Sort of what's in this bill? Why is it significant?
Mm-hmm. So I think before we go directly on that specific bill that is coming, that it just passed in Greece, and it has the title of improving the worker conditions, ironically. It's kind of important to mention that this is a part of the ongoing attempt in the European Union, starting on 2003 with the White Bible, that it was the new flexible conditions at the workforce, and it has been already applied in many European countries, and as long a lot of its parts have been already active in North America, including USA and Canada. So this bill, which ironically, as I said, has this, it's called the bill to improve the workers' condition in Greece. It's coming at a specific time. It's coming in the middle of the pandemic, or the discussion. It's started a month or 2 months ago. And ironically, the government is claiming that it comes to, you know, improve the conditions of the working class in Greece. But what in fact what it's doing is making the working conditions much more flexible. Of course, that flexibility doesn't go and doesn't happen when the workers need it for their own interests, but only goes when the big bosses, when the big monopolies in every sector and factor decide that they need to exploit more their workers, or it's not so busy now, so we can give you a day off. So just to give like a general summary of this anti-worker bill that is that passed yesterday in Greece. So the main thing that it does, it is attacking on the core of the labor rights in Greece and everywhere in the world, the right to the 8-hour shift. So basically, what is happening with the new bill is that until today, a worker that it was working, that they were working 8 hours, after those 8 hours, they were getting paid as overtime. And it also had to be agreed with their union, wherever they were a union, that those overtimes will occur or will happen. And it had to be agreed with the union members. Now, the new bill, what it does is that, first of all, it enables them, even though in a lot of places there are unions, it allows the employer to do individual negotiations with every worker in order for the 2 extra hours, for example, when somebody is working 10 hours, not to be paid. For example, now we're gonna be working 10 hours, but only getting paid for the 8, and eventually you are going to bank those hours to eventually in the future get a day off. So just to give an example, if a worker works 10 hours per day for Monday to Thursday, they will be getting paid for 8 hours per day, and eventually on Friday they might get a day off. But this example is not very accurate to what is going to happen. This is an example that the government here, the New Democracy government, is bringing that, okay, what if somebody wants to work for 4 days and then the fifth they can go see their kids, and or even if it is a student who wants to study for their exams. But that's not accurate, because the bill itself, it gives the ability to the employer to negotiate with the worker. And when they say negotiate, for their in their minds, apparently they think that the employer and the employee, they negotiate like from the same basis, which we all know that is not true. So the bill gives the ability to the employer to actually give that day off when the production is not at a high rate, when basically at these periods of time of the year that they don't need so many workers. So it's a direct attack basically at the 8 hour, the at the basic and fundamental right of working 8 hours, 8 hours of free time, and 8 hours for the workers to take care of themselves and for recess. So basically it's a fundamental attack to that right. And so that's the basis of this bill, I would say. There are other parts on it as well.
Right. So you mentioned, so the sort of centerpiece of the law is extending the working day. I've seen in some of the materials or some of the articles covering the struggle that
that it's also attacking the right to strike and other union rights, and also extending some working days to Sundays. I'm not sure that I understood the basis of the Sunday working day thing. So maybe that's just something that's particular to Greece. Mm-hmm. So can you explain these other facets of the law?
Yeah, and these are also very important aspects of it. To start from the beginning is to say that this law that the New Democracy government is bringing is a continuation, basically. It's the next stage of the many, many different laws that the previous government and the previous government since the beginning of the of the financial crisis in Greece, of the capitalist crisis in Greece, have passed in the last decade. Just to give you an example, the Syriza government it was elected since 2015 until 2019, it was the first government that passed the law that allowed the work day to be extended up to 13 hours for the doctors in the hospitals. So basically what the New Democracy government is doing and is going to apply now for everywhere, for every field and every sector, it was first introduced by the Syriza government for the hospital doctors. Similarly, as you mentioned, for the work on Sundays in Greece, due to the struggle of the labor movements for many decades, Sunday was the day for the workers to rest. And most of the fields, including shops, supermarkets, and all private enterprises were closed on Sunday. So it was the day for the workers to rest. Again, the Syriza government was the first government that allowed those shops and big, of course, it's aiming mostly for, you know, the big companies and the big outlets that exist to have their to be open for 32 Sundays per year. Now, with the new bill that becomes for certain sectors, which is almost everything, for the whole year, so every Sunday. So this is a direct attack on the work, on the right of workers to rest on Sundays. And on top of that, as you mentioned, the other big aspect of this bill, it has to do with the right to strike, and when they try to convince the crowds and the people of Greece that this is a good bill, that it's, as I told you before, they have named it as improving the workers' conditions. They're arguing that nobody wants to strike anymore. They say that this is an approach and a way to fight that it doesn't belong to the 21st century, but their actions show the exact opposite, show that they are afraid of the right to work, of the workers to unionize, to struggle collectively. And that's why they're trying to impose so many difficulties to that right, the right of striking. And they technically, practically make it illegal. Just to give you an example, this specific law, again, based on the law that it was voted by Syriza a couple of years ago, which that law made mandatory that in order for a local union to take a decision for a strike, there has to be 50% plus one vote of all the workers who are members of the union. While at the same time, the current government is ruling, is basically, you know, has been voted by only 40% of the people who voted, and it still has the majority in the Greek parliament. And on the other side, they were asking from the workers to have 50% of every member of the union plus one in order to take a decision for a strike. That was passed under Syriza. Now, they make that even more difficult by saying that it's not only that you have to have 50% plus one to get to be voted, to vote for a strike in order to have the strike, but it says that if the strike will be declared illegal, which that's the case with more than 90% of the strikes that are that have been announced, then the labor councils or the general council of workers of Greece, just to give you an example how the union model is in Greece, there is the first level of the local unions, then there is the labor councils of each big city for the private sector, and above that there is the general council for the whole country. So until today, what it was possible is that if a local union was calling for a strike for a specific day, most of the time that strike would be legal from the court. But the second level of unionization, the labor councils of each city, and the third level, the general council in Greece, had the right to recall that strike, and the workers would be actually covered. You know, in that case, nobody could fire them if there was. A strike has been announced by the general council or by the local councils. With the new law, that is not possible anymore. And when the strike will be declared illegal by the court, and that's, as I said before, more than 90% of the cases, same to the strike that happened yesterday and the week before, the workers won't be covered by the labor council of their city or by the general council of Greece. So it's a direct attack on the right to strike. Also, it is illegal, and it becomes an illegal act to protect your strike as a worker. So if you go during the day outside of your workplace that it has democratically voted for a strike, and you communicate with your fellow colleagues that, you know, we have to fight. This is our weapon. We have to strike. This is illegal anymore. You can't be outside of your workplace and try to convince your fellow workers to follow you on the strike, follow the labor movement. And the leaders of the union movement will definitely face consequences, and they will be faced as criminals if they're trying to protect their own strike.
Panos, I have one question, because it's interesting that you discuss this, because even in Germany has refused to accept these reforms internally within their labor market, right? Like that, in terms of working on Sundays, sort of the kind of the flexibility that's being forced upon Greece. And if you can talk about the role of like the Troika, like the IMF, the EU, in sort of imposing this on Greece, and also I guess like even the demand, like, because clearly this isn't just at the will of the European Union or the IMF, or but also internally, like which forces are really pushing this bill forward or pushing these reforms forward?
As I said, these reforms are have been on the table for more than 15-20 years in the European Union, in the level of the European Union. Of course, there is the right time for everything, right? Greece was in a deep crisis and still is, basically, in a deep capitalist crisis for the last 10 to 15, almost 15 years now. Apparently, the Troika and the IMF is not anymore, affecting the decisions, but that's not That's not true. All the bills, all the anti-people's bills that passed in the last decade still remain. All the memorandums are still on, or their laws. And basically, those kind of flexible working conditions is what the big capital needs right now, right? They need to suppress the right to strike. They need the workers to work 10 hours per day instead of 7, which is, I would say, even like a more, like not even an extreme demand right now with the advance of the technologies in the 21st century. And there are, of course, forces, as I said before, the main player in this, who is very satisfied with the new bill, is the coalition of factory owners and the big monopolies in Greece, who are are celebrating about this new law, because they will be able to, when the times are busy for their companies, to exploit the workers even more by having them work 10 hours per day. And on the other times of the year where there's less work, they'll give them a day off. Basically, it's a lot. There's a lot of money that they save out of that. But every political force that, is following the same route of participation in the European Union, of participation in NATO, of participation with all those reactionary groups. That includes the New Democracy, the ruling party right now. It involves Syriza. It involves Kinal, the previous PASOK, who was the previous Social Democratic Party. All those parties have been in the government for the last 30 years, and they've been following the same strategy. As I said before, it was Syriza who first brought the ability of the hospital doctors to work more than 12 and 13, up to 12 and 13 hours per day. So now they say that they are against that bill, and they are calling everybody to vote for them for the next elections. But we know, we have an experience in Greece from the 5 years of governance from Syriza, where they claim that they will do the same things with the memorandums, but they voted the third one.
So maybe let's talk about the response of labor, because we haven't really touched on that before, and it's been fairly significant. You talked about strikes in the past week, yesterday on the 16th. I guess this will be aired on the 18th, but so on the 16th and on the 10th of June, general strikes in Greece. But also, like, what are the what is the counter proposal from labor and the left? Because this just reminds me, like, I was reading a pamphlet from the Conseil Central of CSN of Montreal, and they were talking about the response of labor to a capitalist crisis in the 80s in this pamphlet. And it talked about the reduction of the working day as one of the demands to increase employment in time of capitalist crisis. And it talked about the ways to stop mass layoffs and things like this that are the sort of inevitable result of, or the inevitable capitalist response to this type of crisis. So what is labor doing against this bill? What is the counter proposals of labor at the moment?
I think here it's important again to mention a little bit the general condition that it exists right now worldwide at the labor movement. We are in the era 30 years after the counter-revolution, 30 years where the new wave of the working class hasn't seen the big achievements of that era. And we are in a period where the working class movement is under attack. It's actually going backwards in many countries. and in the general conditions are not in favor of it. That being said, in Greece, there is a big tradition of working class labor movement, especially with the forces of PAME, which are the Greek militant movement in Greece. And as you said, the slogan today, we say that in the 21st century and with all these achievements of the technological achievements and improvements, it's unbelievable to discuss about 10 hours workdays. The realistic today is to demand 7 hours, 7 hours per day, 35 hours per week, and increases in the salaries. This is what the labor movement is demanding in Greece right now. And another useful distinction to make is that, of course, we have the fighting, the working class labor movement, the working class oriented labor movement in Greece. But at the same time, we have the other side of the story. Again, within the labor movement, we have labor movements and leaders of the labor movement that have been sold to the government, that have been sold to the big monopolies, and are trying to, internally attack to the labor movement. And this is a characteristic example of that is the current leadership of YSE, which is the General Council of private workers, of workers in the private sector in Greece, who they try to underestimate, or until very recently they said we have no idea about this bill, or until very recently they were claiming that this bill, we need just to improve it a little bit and it's gonna be fine. And even a couple of days before the general strike that it was announced on the 10th of June, they were trying to play games with the labor movement and change the dates. And, they were trying to make it, an attempt. They were attempting to have a strike which wouldn't be, massive and wouldn't have enough participation, but they were wrong. And again, the class powers, the working class syndicates and unions in Greece gave a huge struggle, a huge fight for, and had a very successful strike on the 10th of June last week, which you can see the pictures online of the participations, where thousands, literally thousands of workers striking everywhere in Greece, in every major city and smaller towns. They demonstrated the participation was one of the best in the last decades, or maybe the best in the last decade. And that gave more, power to declare a second one on the 16th of June, yesterday, where again there was a big participation and there was an evening mobilization, I guess, again outside of the Greek Parliament, where the discussion was happening for the bill. All that shows that despite the difficult conditions that the labor movement exists, it is right now worldwide, in Greece, we have proven that the labor movement exists. It has a working class orientation. And basically, despite that this bill was passed yesterday at the Greek Parliament, we are clearly telling them that it's never gonna be enforced in the working class. We're gonna fight it at every workplace. That's why the answer to that to that bill and that attempt is that only the organized worker is a strong worker who can actually fight back against this unprecedented attack from the bourgeois and their parties against the right for against the fundamental right, as I said at the beginning, which was gained 100 years ago, the right to an 8-hour work day.
It's fascinating that you've discussed this, but in terms of in terms of resisting the bill and resisting sort of the ongoing measures that's taking place in the workplaces and by the unions, has there been any support? Is there any resistance to the bill actually within any of the political parties? Or is there a sort of a unity that we need to push forward these reforms? We need to accept, you know, further this, you know, dependence on the Troika. There was the recent, new package from the EU. So is there been any resistance in terms of within the parliament, or has been a kind of a unity between all of the political parties?
So there are, here again, there are two sides. There is what it seems and the evident, what they want to show, and the reality. So of course the ruling government, the right wing party of New Democracy, who is bringing that bill, is in favor, and they are trying to set another fake dipole again between Syriza, the other pole of the dipole, which was the previous government, and as I mentioned before. But really, no matter how hard they try to be against that bill, their 5 years of governance have actually paved the way for that bill today. And ironically, they were even saying that we are against that bill, and this is a reason, well, we should go to elections right now. But indeed, yesterday, they voted about 57 of the articles of that bill. So of course this is one side of the picture, but on the other side we have the clear position and the clear opposition on the bill by the Communist Party of Greece, which has been the party that with its members are with and its members within the labor movement are trying to mobilize and organize the masses to against that that bill. And as I said, the communists in the movement who participate within PAME, with the labor in the labor movement, are in the forefront of this struggle, of course, along with other forces building that social unity at the level of the working class. But that's the general picture in the Greek parliament. On the other side, the previous Social Democratic Party of PASOK, now called KINAL, voted also a couple of the articles, a little bit more than what Syriza did. But again, they've, with their governance, have paved the way to that specific bill. So that's what it is right now. There are other forces in the Greek parliament, like Mera Gosipende, the party of Varoufakis, who also participated in the Syriza government in the past. And that's pretty much it. And the reactionary party of the right wing of Greek Solution, who are, replacing Golden Dawn in the Greek parliament. So this is the reality in the political spectrum right now.
And you talk about, is there any, there was demonstrations in the last 2 days and then the strikes, but is there anything coming up? Will it be an ongoing general strike, or there isn't actually the capacity to keep that going at the moment?
Of course, this is a decision of the labor movement and the local labor unions at every town. The huge participation shows that this bill is not going to be easily enforced in the workplace, and this is an ongoing struggle. There have been talks for ongoing strikes, but as we said, we also have to take into we have to take into consideration the participation in the labor movement right now and the difficult condition that it is situated. But of course, there will be reactions. It's an ongoing struggle. There will be, despite the attempts from the General Council, which, as I said before, they're really doing their best to not to have a strike. For example, yesterday, the General Council of Greece didn't call for a strike. Only the local councils that are participating with and collaborating with PAME were the ones who called for a strike, and actually the public workers as well, after a lot of pressure from PAME. But it is going to be a huge fight that is going to be given in the next period, and it has to be given at every workplace. It has to be given from every local union. That's why it's important that the participation in the union movement has to increase in the next period.
Well, that's I think all the time you have. So thanks so much for taking this long road through the current crisis in Greece, and we look forward to hearing more from the combativity of the Greek working class in the months to come. Thanks, Panos.
Oh, also, Panos, before you go, is there a place where people can go for English speakers for more information? Because it's actually quite interesting. Not that there's a media blackout about the general strike, but there isn't the kind of the fervor, sort of, you know, all the protests during the crises, you know, and around Syriza. There's sort of this muted response in the media. So, is there media that people can go to kind of to follow what's happening in Greece?
Is the first source, I would say, it's the official website of the WFTU, which is the World Federation of Trade Unions, where they are following the events in Greece, and their office is actually located in Greece, and the secretary. There are the online, on Twitter, and the official account of PAME, P-A-M-E, the All Workers Militant Front in Greece. There are more websites, of course. Most of them are in Greek. And there are also some media that are covering the events, but I don't have something in mind to propose specific other than those.
Thank you, Panos.
We'll definitely follow this. Thanks so much for taking the time today.
Thank you very much. And this struggle that is given in Greece right now, it's the same struggle has to be given in Canada and everywhere in the world against that synchronized attack against our rights.
We've been listening to our interview with Panos, labor activist, organizer who's currently in Greece, talking to us about the general strike and that just took place in Greece, and the labor reforms that have been in the works for the last 15 to 20 years in Greece, and only intensified with the financial crisis of Greece that's continuing. And you know, we've been listening to a really exhilarating show, and it's clear that you know, despite the doom and gloom that working people of the world are fighting everywhere for a better world. So this is it for this month's edition of Labor Radio. This is your co-host Mustafa Henaway.
And I'm Stefan Doucette. Thanks so much for listening. Don't forget to check us out on Facebook, where you can find links to listen to the show if you miss it live, or if you want to share it with your friends. So come to us next month on the third Thursday of the month between 5 and 6 p.m. on CKUT 90.3 FM. Thanks so much for listening.
Arab Patties is on a fast break with Veggie Patty leading the charge. The pass is down deep to Goat Patty. Goat Patty passes baseline to Beef Patty. Beef Patty shoots from downtown at the buzzer. And bingo! It's in! It's in! Carob Patties wins the game and is now the world champions! The number one in Montreal. Come on down to 9550 Jean Milot in LaSalle for the best patties, roadies, jerk chicken, and more. Or call us at 438-387-4004. Carob Patties, the champions of Montreal.
Good evening. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio, from drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between. I'm your host, Sarah Day, recording from home on Thursday, June 17th, 2021. On tonight's show, more conversations from the 30th Annual Fringe Festival. My guest tonight, storyteller Nisha Coleman of All Right, Solving the Problem of Living.
That was my goal with this show, Solving the Problem of Living. It's talking about struggling with being alive and coming to terms with being alive so that you can live better. Because once you accept, okay, I'm alive, I will accept to live.
Justin Kalla and Julia Kennefic of The Space Between, a story about ghostly friends.
Not only are we kind of resurrecting live theater here, but also just, you know, getting back in touch with people and getting back to these connections that, you know, might not have been, not discarded, but put on hold while everybody has been dealing with so much from the outside world that's been going on.
Musician Ali Wei with the Choral Poetry Project.
I really do intend for it to be a soothing experience and a reflective and a deep experience, and for people not to be bombarded or particularly surprised. That's not what I'm aiming for. I'm aiming for people to feel connected to themselves and to what's happening in the room.
We are headed into the final weekend of the 30th Annual Montreal Fringe Festival. With just a few shows to go and limited seating, many are notching sold-out runs, with over $30,000 in ticket sales so far. You'll recall